Erica Hallquist and her husband Pablo Dobner have a very successful little family-owned business right in the heart of Barcelona. There, deep within the Catalonian streets, next to little cafes, countless designer studios and cute little tapas bars, this lovely couple set up shop. Creating and handcrafting what has become a beautiful and very sought-after product, Erica and her husband Pablo make porn.
Yeah, I hadn't even ever thought that I was gonna become Erica Lust, but I kind of did. It all started, I would say, back at university. I was studying political science, and I was a young adult, a young woman, young Swedish woman. I was born in Stockholm, and I was curious about sex as everyone, you know? I had this kind of typical experience of, you know, it kind of all started with a boyfriend. He came around to my dorm room with a videotape, because it was video cassettes, you know. And then we watched it, and I had this feeling that somehow he was all kind of inspired and happy with what he was looking at. But I had the feeling that the role of the woman was too much about pleasing the man, and that it was very little about her actual sexual experience. And I kind of realized that most of my male friends, they had a very easy time with pornography. But most of my female friends, they had similar experiences to mine. I kind of got into trying to understand pornography and investigating it. And for the first time, I was seeing porn that was made from a woman's point of view, from a female perspective, with the female gaze as the main objective. For me, it just felt fantastic. It all kind of came together, and I saw that, oh my God, there's actually a possibility of doing it differently.
This is the story of how Erica Lust turned the obscure world of porn into a platform that opened a conversation about gender roles and gender equality, both in front of the cameras and behind them. Together with her partner Pablo, she found a delicate way of creating explicit content that has rescued the largely forgotten female gaze and proving that pornography can in fact be for him and for her simultaneously. They have managed to elevate porn with beautiful images and engaging storytelling, and catered to a huge and hungry market that had been ignored for a very long time. I'm Niklas Jansen, co-founder of Blinkist, and this is State of Mind. Join me on discovering some of the most fascinating and accomplished people in the world. We'll explore how the amazing skills, the attitudes, the habits and victories are a product of the state of mind. The Erica Lust story begins on a hot summer night, where a young Swedish girl met a handsome Argentinian boy in a bar.
I met Erica in the summer of the year 2000 in Barcelona. I enter a bar called Benidorm. It was a bar in the old quarter of Barcelona.
And suddenly, this man walked in through the small door at this bar.
And I was wearing a red Kenzo shirt.
A red shirt, exactly the same color as my dress.
I normally don't dress in red. I don't wear such bright colors.
That is Pablo, Erica's now husband and CEO of Erica Lust Films.
And then this girl came to me.
I just kind of went up to him and said, "Hey, we are wearing the same color."
And she said, "Oh, look, we're wearing the same color," which, by the way, was the color of the bar, which was like predominantly red. And she told to me, and still today I am amazed, because it's not every night that you go out and a gorgeous woman comes up to you and start a conversation. And well, it was the beginning of the mobile phones, so I asked her for her mobile number, And I text her the following day to invite her for a nice dinner, and the rest is history.
Every summer when I had my summer holiday from university, I was coming down to Barcelona to study Spanish.
This time we're in the land of Picasso, Gaudi, Salvador Dali, and coffee con leche.
As I'm Swedish, you know, Sweden is a very small country. Swedish is a small language. If you want to get out in the world, you kind of need to learn other languages. And I kind of fell in love with Barcelona. I just kept coming back here. I started to come here in the summer of 97, and I was back 98, 99, 2000, you know, and then suddenly I said, oh my God, I love this city. This is really where I want to live.
And so Erica packed her little suitcase and left her cold Swedish hometown to move to the much warmer Spanish metropole.
And then I realized that I had studied political science, and Barcelona is not, you know, this kind of city where there's lots of international organizations and you can easily get a job in with something related to political science. So reality obviously knocked on the door, and I needed to earn some money and to find, you know, something to do. And I had friends working in the audiovisual industry. Most of them were doing advertisement, because at that time, a lot of European advertisement were shot here in Barcelona. And I had friends that knew that I was looking for a job, and they offered me to do basic things. That's kind of how I ended up in the audiovisual industry, you know. I started as a runner and a driver and a juice maker, and, you know, I was working, doing any kind of production job that came around. And I realized that I just loved the whole kind of atmosphere of a film set, everything about it. And I'm a good observer and a good student, and I really, you know, started to figure out how it all worked. And little by little, I started to advance, you know. I became a production assistant, and then I became a production manager and a location manager and a producer. And at the same time, I mean, film had always been kind of my passion, but I never ever thought that I was going to be able to work with it. And then this opportunity kind of came around to do a short film.
Erica had worked hard, and she managed to climb up within the TV and TV commercials industry. But if you want to become a director, you have to make your own stuff.
It's, you know, the normal way you advance when you start study cinema. There's always a point where you need to do something yourself. So I had the opportunity to do a short film, and I think that was really the moment when I started to put all of these thoughts that I had had years before at university together. And I asked myself, what is important to you? What kind of film do you want to do? And then I realized that I wanted to do an erotic film, that I wanted to do something even maybe more than erotic, maybe even an explicit film, you know? And I kind of started, you know, writing down my ideas, and I came up with this little script of a film called The Good Girl. And of course, also had to do with myself and my moment in life and how I felt like, you know, the typical kind of good girl, always expected to do the right things and being there for others, but maybe not thinking that much about herself.
The ambitious young filmmaker had found her vision and the types of stories she wanted to tell, the types of films she wanted to make. But creating a short film is not an easy task. Apart from the vision and the idea and writing a screenplay, one needs equipment, locations, and a crew, which all costs money. Or at least a couple of favors.
Of course, I had a lot of people laughing at me, thinking that it was kind of ridiculous what I wanted to do. Some almost in front of me, others probably behind my back, you know. And then when I approach people kind of from, you know, working in film, etc., many people told me no directly.
Erica received very mixed reactions to her idea of making a pornographic short film. And many shied away instantly from being part of creating explicit content. But a young director believed in her vision, no matter what anyone said.
Well, I guess I am a stubborn person. I was also young and kind of, you know, not afraid. It's like I didn't have anything to lose, really. I didn't have anything, you know. It was just, I have this idea, this is what I want to do. I think it could be cool. Let's do it, you know. So I guess it had to do with, you know, all that kind of energy. I normally have an easy time of kind of getting people to come around together with me and just, you know, diving into something unknown.
And eventually, as all the pieces for the short film were coming together, Erica knew that she needed to find the right actors for her film. Or in this case, performers.
The whole process of finding performers, actors, was really difficult because I didn't really know people from the adult industry. And actually, it's a whole story in itself because I kind of contacted at first an agency that works with performers. And when I said I had a film and I wanted to shoot it and I needed a man and a woman, they sent over an email, you know, with names and pictures to me. And I said, some of them might be interesting, but I'm really going to have to need to meet them and to talk to them and doing a, you know, a real casting to figure out who I want for these characters. And then they said, this is not how it works, Erica. This industry, it's not how it works. You don't talk to people. Here you look at a picture and then you tell them, you know, how much, at what time and where. And that didn't feel right to me at all, you know. I ultimately reached an actress, got her number, I called her, and it was actually a really fun conversation. Hello. Because she said,
hey, I'm really close to where you are. I could come by, but listen, I'm out with my grandma. So just tell me, does your place like look, you know, do you have like a lot of porn pictures and stuff like that? Because my grandma doesn't know what I'm doing.
So I said, no, this is just, you know, a regular home. Come by and we have a chat. So my first chat with a porn performer was to get her with her grandma. And she was fantastic. And then she helped me to find the performer for my first film. And that is something that I've seen during all my work, that the best way of, you know, finding people and having them working together is asking them who they want to work with, because that's when you get people to work together who actually have good chemistry, you know. And if I'm making a film about people having great sex, which is obviously, you know, the idea of these films, then I really need people who are into each other. Because if they are not, you will see that on the film.
The good girl was ready to start shooting. This awesome great part, thanks to the help of that handsome Argentinian boy from the Red Bar. Ever since that hot summer night, Erica and Pablo had become partners, romantic partners. But throughout the creation of this explicit short film, they became strong business partners, venturing together, hand in hand, into the depths of the adult entertainment industry.
Today he's my husband. We have been together for 19 years, but he helped me to get a little, you know, financing to actually make this film, and I made it, and it became kind of a success in a way, you know.
The Good Girl didn't become a success right away. It took some time until this little film caught the attention of the masses.
the reality of it is that it lay around in my drawer for a year before something actually happened. You know, at the beginning, it was just a film that I showed to some friends, and everybody that saw it liked it. And I tried to pitch it to a few companies, adult companies. They all gave me really positive feedback, saying like, hey, Erica, this is cool. This is a great film. I love what you have done. But listen, there's no market for this. What are you talking about? You know, there's no market for women. Women are not interested in buying anything that has to do with sex, you know. Basically, they told me, you pay women for sex. That was it. And I felt so sad and so kind of, you know, just, oh my God, what a horrible world we live in somehow, you know, where people have this vision that there's no market for women. It just felt wrong.
Again, Erica had been confronted with people who didn't share her vision of what pornography could be. And so she was left, having put all this energy into a film that apparently nobody wanted to see.
And then I actually started a blog online, like ericalust.com, my little blog where I started to talk about sex and film and porn and feminism and gender and all these things that I was thinking about that was in my head at that time. And I published this short film for free on my blog. And that's actually how everything started. I can't really tell you how, but it kind of got viral somehow. And people started to watch it and they downloaded it. And in a few weeks, I had 2 million of downloads. And people were just sending emails saying, hey, Eric, I love your film. This is so great. This is so different. When are you going to make more? And I think that was the signal somehow to me that, oh my God, it's not only me. There are actually more people out there kind of craving the same kind of I didn't know, I didn't have a name back then, but indie porn, you know, independent porn somehow, I would call it. And that was when I sat down together with my partner and we started to talk about the possibility of making more and maybe, you know, founding a production company. And that's how Erica Lust Films started.
After the break, we will find out how Erica and Pablo turned a little short film and a blog into one of the most influential companies in the world.
If you're enjoying this episode of State of Mind, you'll probably also enjoy Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that jumpstarts your personal learning journey. You can listen to key ideas from nonfiction books and discover new perspectives with eye-opening shows just like this one. If you'd like to try Blinkist, go to Blinkist.com/SOM to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist Premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Ooh. Blinkist.com/SOM to get 25% off and a free 7-day trial.
Excellent.
Blinkist.com/SOM.
After the success of The Good Girl, Erica Lust Films went ahead, giving birth to another couple of short films and a documentary project, all winning international awards and being very well received by a large community hungry for Erica's films. So hungry that the company needed to expand in order to keep up with the rising demand.
We realized that this is, you know, we need more energy, we need more people, otherwise it's not gonna work.
And the world was also changing, one step at a time.
So 2010, that was also when the shift started from DVDs and, you know, packages going out all the time to creating a platform online. And that was a huge challenge in itself because we don't come from technology. And at the beginning, just finding people being able to help us to build technology that could work for this was a huge challenge.
As challenging as it was, creating an online platform was a great way of reaching people all over the globe who are seeking alternative pornography.
So the platform we had back then was a very simple one. It's definitely part of the success that we have had is the distribution. You know, if we hadn't found a way to distribute our own content, we would not be where we are today.
The uncontrollable growth of the internet also came with its downside, making piracy spread like wildfire. But having her film stolen and passed around the web for free was not a thing that infuriated Erica. Her rage was due to something completely different.
Of course, my films are being pirated. What makes me really mad about it, it's the way they are pirating it, because they are changing all the names and all the titles. You know, I make a film with a beautiful title, for example, and they then put it on their sites and they change it and they put big breasted blonde fucked by, you know, 2BBC or whatever. You know, it's offensive the way they are doing it. So I'm not happy about that at all. And then I get extremely upset and very frustrated, because when I see things like, you know, Tiny Teen getting destroyed, for me that is opposite of, you know, erotic, of sexy, of it's just wrong, completely wrong. I believe that most of the porn that's out there, that it's showing a depressing vision of human sexuality. And I mean, we can do it so much better, really. And then for me, what is also very important at this moment in life, probably also because I am a mother and I have two girls, you know, it's young people and how they grow up around all this pornography. Because obviously when I grow up, you know, to get to watch porn was difficult. You know, you kind of needed to find that tape somewhere, you know, someone needed to have it. And today, young people are getting fed from a very early age with sexually explicit images, and many of them showing, you know, things that are just not representing a healthy sexuality somehow. And for me, it's so important. We started a project online called thepornconversation.org. It's a non-profit project. It's just, you know, information for parents and for educators to go online and to see kind of how can you approach this subject? How can you actually talk to young people about porn and sex? And I think that's extremely important, just to tell them that porn is an exaggerated fiction, that is not the same as sex, you know, and to tell them that many of those images are very hardcore, showing, you know, a relationship between men and women that are not representing real sexuality.
Ever since she saw that first adult video cassette, Erica needed to show the world that there's another way of making porn, by portraying a healthy sexual relationship on screen. Something completely different than what the mainstream had been producing.
In the porn industry, when you talk to people, they are not using the word filmmakers, they are using the word kind of shooters, you know, people who know how to operate the camera, but they don't really have a vision, you know. And most of the porn that is produced today is not produced with an artistic, you know, idea and artistic values behind. I mean, when we are doing a film, we do the work the same way as we would do if it would be any independent film, you know, from the idea, developing the script, developing storyboards, talking to, you know, an art director about how are we actually gonna show this, finding interesting locations. We don't ask the performers only to come with their suitcase and their standard, you know, lingerie that they are using mostly for so many of the porn shoots. No, we do all the work together as a crew with the whole concept developed. And I think that is something definitely that is not done in, you know, the mainstream porn world today. most of the people working on my film crews comes from, you know, from film, from advertisement, from television, from fashion, photography, you know, from other industries. Partly because I want that kind of fresh look on this subject. I don't want them to, you know, to do the formula that the industry has done for so long.
For Erica, it's very simple. If you want to tell stories and create erotic imagery that turns women on, that speaks to women, you need to have women behind the cameras.
I think that when you start talking about trying to find a label or how do you call this, how do you communicate to people, etc., you bring up feminism, and I am aware that some people call it feminist porn, because when you say, for example, feminist porn, there's a clique of people not understanding at all what you are talking about, because they think that in feminism there's something anti-male and that there's in porn something anti-female, and they can't make them go together. Or they imagine, you know, they imagine this kind of idea of ugly women with hair under their arms, with the strap-ons, ready to go out and fuck the men of the world in their ass, you know? They kind of think that that's the idea of feminist porn. And I mean, if we talk about feminist porn, for me, it's very clear that I am talking about representation and participation, having women involved in the making of, you know, in the decision-making part, having women behind the cameras, having women in production, in, you know, as DOPs, as camera operators, in sound, in, you know, editing, in script writing, in art design, you know, in the whole process, because I think that is really how we can make the female gaze come through in these films.
Dozens of films, awards, and different online platforms later, Erica has been named one of the 100 most inspiring and influential women of 2019 by the BBC. Without a doubt, she's had a huge influence on the world.
And I think that also have had an effect on adult content. Yeah, I think it is happening. A year ago was the first time I kind of, you know, got closer. I started to get to know some of the players, and especially some of the, you know, industry people, more like producers, performers, etc. I think that they are really accepting me, and they are really understanding what I'm doing, and that what we are doing is maybe in a little more kind of organic way, more like an organic or family restaurant than a McDonald's. You know, this is not, we are not like the factory of sausages. This is more like, let's see how we're going to do this receipt, and who are we going to count with, and where can we find the best ingredients, and, you know, that's our style. But I see a shift in general in the industry, and the need of starting to making things with more values and better working conditions for everyone involved. That is happening. And maybe I've been at least, you know, a little influence for some people regarding that. It all connects to kind of a bigger mission that I already had as a young person, you know, studying political science, wanting to do something good in the world.
Erica has accomplished a lot working in a world as obscure as the adult entertainment industry. And in spite of the challenges that come from working in porn, she's always felt comfortable and extremely motivated to keep on pushing.
She is succeeding with something she believes in, and that a voice like her and other women were necessary. And we're making a very profitable, interesting business with that. So her passion comes from the fact that she succeeded with a company that at the same time is doing something good. It's a match that I think that is what creates her energy and her passion, because it doesn't happen like that all the time.
I think it also has to do with feeling proud of who you am and what you do somehow. I think my energy also comes from me feeling very, very proud and very happy with what I'm working with.
And so, the young Swedish girl and the handsome Argentinian boy created their little shop and have been happy partners ever since that evening in that red bar.
I don't know, we've been together for 20 years. I'm the father of her two daughters. We are still super in love and engaged into each other. She's a mother of a 12 and a 9-year-old, and she's really good at it.
They have created a family of their own, and also a family of filmmakers who believe that pornography can be a wonderful medium telling stories about the very thing that makes us exist.
We kind of need to get rid of this stigma we have around sex and especially around porn and start kind of accepting that, you know, porn can be so many things. Porn can be misogynistic and racist and horrible and disgusting. But at the same time, porn can be amazing and beautiful and fantastic and empowering. It all depends on, you know, on the values that the creators have of making what they are making, you know?
Next time on State of Mind. The inspiring story of Xavier Bettel, Luxembourg's first openly gay prime minister.
I fully agree, President El-Sisi, with your speech, but you missed some parts. In half of the countries, I wouldn't be able to stand here because gay people would be killed.
And about how everything we know about leadership might have become a thing of the past.
I think that people are not looking for perfection in leadership now. What I think people are craving is authenticity.
If you plan to be prime minister or you plan to be mayor, you won't be a good politician.
New episodes of State of Mind airing every Wednesday. State of Mind is a production of Invisible Media and Blinkist. If you like what we're doing here, please take a moment and support us by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. State of Mind is executive produced by Ignacio Kalek and Alexander Bartole. State of Mind is also written by Alexander. This episode was edited by Daniel Manrique. Sound recording and promos by Elias Gonzalez. Music direction, sound design, and mixing by Moritz Monafalvi. The State of Mind theme was composed and produced by Raphael Riner. Additional music and sound effects, courtesy of our friends at Epidemic Sound. Check them out, they have really nice stuff there. Thank you, Erika Lust, for taking the time to talk to us. Also, big thank you to Erika's husband and partner, Pablo Dobner. Also, thank you to Andrea Ponce and Heidi Switch. Unfortunately, we couldn't include their interviews in this episode. Nevertheless, we enjoy talking to them so much. These women are changing the world. Special thanks to Thomas Haas, Gustavo Ahrens, and Catalina Agende. Got Instagram? Follow Invisible Media for the latest news and a behind-the-scenes look at the making of the show. The handle is @TheInvisibleMedia. There's one more thing. Check out ericalust.com to find out more about Erika's mission and work. Her vision is really inspiring. I'm Niklas Janssen, your host, and this is State of Mind.